Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Welcome to Concussion Talk Podcast. I'm Nick Mercer.
And I'm Erin Guilfoyle.
And today, before we start our conversation with Dr. Sasha Blaskovich and Ethan Bryan, I'd like to take one second to thank our sponsor, HeadCheck Health.
Concussion Talk Podcast is presented by HeadCheck Health. HeadCheck Health bridges the gaps in concussion care through simple, powerful technology. Join organizations like the Canadian Football League, Trek Factory Racing, the Canadian Junior Hockey League, Eastern Washington University, and Volleyball Canada, who rely on HeadCheck Health to improve communication and optimize care. Visit HeadCheckHealth.com for more.
Okay, I am talking now to Ethan O'Brien and Dr. B. Dr. Blaskovich, and I'm going to ask them both to please just, I don't know which one of you wants to start, but start with just your bit of a background and how you got started down this path towards concussion and the potential therapies for each. So,
for sure, yeah. So, my name's Ethan O'Brien, and I had my first concussion when I was 8 years old. And it was while playing ice hockey, I collided with another player, and we both fell backwards, and I smashed my head hard on the ice. And that ended up giving me a really bad concussion, probably one of the worst concussions that I've experienced over my 20 years of concussion history.
And you've experienced a bunch, haven't you?
I've had a lot, yeah. Somewhere in the range of 10 to 15. I kind of lost track of how many exactly.
Wow. Yeah,
it's true. Anyways, that first concussion, it ended up leaving me really susceptible to more concussions after that. So it became very easy for me to get a concussion from other sports injuries or hockey hits where, you know, other kids might bounce back from that and not have concussion symptoms. But because my brain was already injured, I found it was easier for me to get concussions, especially after they started to build up in my teens. And Dr. Blaskovich and I first met about 3 years ago. After I had a snowboarding injury, I was snowboarding down the hill and fell backwards and hit my head on the ice. And so I was having a lot of post-concussion symptoms, and I was starting to get really concerned about, you know, am I going to be developing CTE, or is there something that's really wrong with my brain? Because I was experiencing about, you know, 15 to 17 years of post-concussion symptoms at that point. And they were on and off. They'd come and go, and sometimes minor bumps would give me a few weeks of symptoms, sometimes it wouldn't. So I wasn't really sure what was going on. So my dad actually came to see Dr. Blaskovich about another injury that he had. And he started talking about my post-concussion symptoms and my history of concussions. And Dr. Blaskovich suggested that I come in to see him because he had a unique perspective on the whole thing. So came in to see him. And right away, within the first meeting, he's like, yeah, I think you have cranial cervical instability. I don't think it's actually a brain injury. And that just opened up a whole new world to me because I was constantly stuck in the rhetoric of, you know, there's something wrong with my brain. It might not be something else. So Dr. B is one of the only doctors in Canada that has access to a motion x-ray machine. And that was able to demonstrate to me that I did have instability in my neck, and it showed that my vertebrae was shifting, and that was pushing pressure onto my brainstem occasionally. And he then taught me different ways to deal with the instability in my neck and how to relieve.
Oh, did I listen, or did Aaron, did you listen too?
Yeah, there.
Okay. You can hear them? You can hear them? I can hear them?
No, I cannot.
Okay. I'll pause them. Okay. Oh no. You back, Ethan? Hello?
Yep, we're here.
Okay.
Yeah, I just paused for a second. Okay. I can go back.
You were talking about the stair step before I get too much into it, the shift of what that is, but you stopped where you were, you left off at stair step, basically, of your neck.
Okay.
Sipster.
So you want me to go from there?
Yes, please.
Okay, cool. Is it recording again?
Sorry, Georgina, you didn't mention stair step. That's about where you were, though.
Yeah, we're still recording.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I came to see Dr. Blaskovich, and he explained to me that I'm probably dealing with cranial cervical instability in my neck. And that was really eye-opening for me, because prior to that, all the other doctors were just looking at my brain, and they weren't looking at anything else. And so he showed on a motion x-ray machine that he has here in his clinic that I was dealing with instability in my neck, and we could see that the vertebrae was actually shifting, and I had ligament damage on both sides of my neck, and that was what was causing these reoccurring post-concussion symptoms. So that was really eye-opening to me. And one day when we were getting treated, I just said, like, hey, you should write a book about this. Like, you know, I know a lot of people are probably dealing with this kind of injury, and, you know, we should try and get that information out to the world. And I asked if he wanted help doing it. So he said yes. And we then spent the next year and a bit meeting every morning or every Tuesday morning to work on writing the book and doing interviews and talking about different subjects. And after a year and a bit, we produced a book and online course, and we've created the concussionrecoverykit.com. And I'll let Dr. B explain his post-concussion symptom.
Wow. That's a story.
So my name is Sasha Blaskovich. People call me Dr. B for ease of not having to say my last name. I played a Canadian football, if you can call it that, from high school all the way through university, and I'm sure I had lots of bumps and whatnot that may have added to contribute to this, but I had one major injury that happened in my second year of university where basically I threw a ball. I was playing quarterback, and I threw the ball down the field. I was looking at my pretty throw, and linebacker came through the line, and he basically wrapped me up. He didn't hit me hard, but the way he wrapped me up, he held my arms, and I couldn't free them up, and I was so busy looking downfield at what I just, you know, the ball that I just thrown.
Oh. Okay, just the ball. Are you there?
Basically.
Oh, sorry. I lost you. I don't know if Aaron
did. You're losing me.
Sorry. Aaron, can you hear them?
No, they're breaking up again.
Okay.
I can start again. Is that better now?
Yeah, good now. That was it. You're looking at the ball down the field. You just thrown the ball at the leopard. Sorry.
Sure, yeah. I was looking at the ball go down the field as a linebacker came through the line, and he wrapped me up and held my arms and didn't hit me really hard, but he held on. And as we went backwards for me, forwards for him, I fell backwards and hit my head on the ground in my helmet. And the lights went out, basically. It's like someone shot off a cannon in my head, and I think I was probably unconscious for, you know, a split second or a few seconds, and scraped myself off the ground and went off to the bench because we were done that series. And basically didn't think anything of it, didn't realize I was concussed. And can you still hear me?
Yeah.
My job my responsibility as a quarterback was, when we're not in the game, to go stand by the head coach or the offensive coordinator waiting for back into the game. And what I ended up actually doing then is, are we out again?
No, we're good now.
We're getting a little bit connectivity issues, but you come back in where you were leaving off, so it's good.
Okay. I ended up finding myself at the end of the bench just chatting with the guys and joking around, which wasn't out of the usual for me because I did that often anyways. It's just that I never did that during a game. And within a very short amount of time, it was time for us to go back, the offense to go back into the game. And then the coach was calling me and I wasn't standing beside him. And then finally the word got down to the end of the bench and the guys are like, you got to go back in. I was like, okay. So I went back in and even forgot my helmet. Someone had to hand me my helmet. And then I ran up to the coach and I ran, you know, a few steps into the field. And, you know, I turned back and I said, what am I supposed to do? And he goes, and he gave me the easiest play in the book to go run. And then I turned around and went back towards the field, took three steps and came and turned around again. And I said, what's that? So I didn't even remember the simplest play in our book. And he called a timeout and had me assessed and basically they diagnosed me with a concussion. And they followed the regular protocol. And I think within 2 or 3 weeks, I was back at it. But in retrospect, that exact mechanism of injury is what a lot of patients that I now deal with have had. And what that did is it actually tore the ligaments on both sides of my upper neck, which support my head on my neck. And by doing so, as Ethan said, it's resulted in transient, which means it comes and goes, pressure on my brainstem resulting in the concussive-like or post-concussive-like symptoms. And the reason that that happens is that when the integrity of the ligaments is compromised, so there's too much movement between the vertebrae, the muscles try to compensate, or the muscles have no choice but to compensate based on the brain's input to them. And so the muscles become overly active. And as they become overly active, they get fried out. When they get fried out, they have two options: to completely release and let go, which poses them a risk to ripping, or they seize down and become locked up. And so when they become locked up, these now capable of shifting more than they should vertebrae get shifted out of position more than they should. And then that causes a longer term shift, which results in a longer term compression of the brainstem, which results in what would be considered a flare-up. And so then the treatment for that would be to address the muscles that have responded to the instability, because you can't really address the instability directly. And so when you release the muscles and put them back in a state of active reactive mode where they can actually do their job, then the flare-up goes away or goes down and you lead a more normal life. But the fact of the matter remains is that the ligament damage is permanent. And the muscles will fail at some point in time again, resulting in a flare-up and an elevation in symptoms where the same protocol, and I've been following that same protocol for the last 16 years, and to date has been very effective every time.
Well, I guess so Aaron has better questions about good questions with the neck coming up, but I'll first ask you if you could talk about the motion x-ray machine they have. What does that tell you?
Absolutely. So basically, when x-rays are regularly done, or MRIs or CT scans, it's all done static, not moving. And so basically, the assessment is of the anatomy, not of the function of the anatomy. And so because we are functional creatures constantly moving and having to have A, support, but B, function and protection of our spinal cord and brainstem and brain. So the main job of our skull and our spinal canal, or our spine, is to primarily protect our brain and our brainstem and spinal cord. And then the second function is movement. And so when the ligaments get torn, the only way you can assess whether they're torn or not is by putting those bones through their regular gamut of movement and assessing indirectly, albeit, whether there's too much movement occurring between specific segments, which would delineate that the ligaments that would passively hold those bones stably together have been compromised. And when they've been compromised, the responsive symptoms that a person has, depending on which level would be compromised, will be manifested in the types of symptoms they have. So for example, if somebody has excessive movement midway or lower down in their neck, it'll generally affect their arms. It could affect their lower extremities and their torso and core, but generally it'll affect their arms. But when somebody has that up high in their neck, it will involve their brainstem, which could involve anything in the body because of the control systems implemented in that brainstem area for our bodily function. And so by moving around in the motion x-ray, so the x-ray itself doesn't move, the patient moves within the x-ray field. And because this is a reverse image of the regular x-ray, so in regular x-ray, bones are white, background is dark. Yeah. In this form of x-ray, the bones are dark and the background is lighter. And so with that reversal, you can actually have movement and not have blur, or not have as much blur, so that that you're not looking at the anatomy of the bones, you're looking at how that anatomy functions. And by assessing how it functions, you can delineate whether there's excess movement between certain segments, which would be akin to instability. So normally chiropractors deal with, and most manual medicine people deal with, things being stuck. Well, this is a problem that's the opposite of that. Things are actually too unstuck.
Oh, guys.
Very neat, yeah. Kind of a question for both of you, I suppose, is I just want to ask about certain triggers you might notice. I know the nature of this injury kind of mimics post-concussive symptoms, and those are often triggered by bright lights, screen time, all that kind of things. And if similar in the way, if there's something that you notice or try to avoid. And then Dr. B, you also mentioned flare-ups, and I was just kind of wondering if you could go a little bit further into that too, and how to manage those symptoms and how maybe a patient might manage them on their own.
Sure, I'll tackle the gist of bright lights, sounds, say for example, screen time, like you said, screen time is not only involved in staring at a screen, but it also involves a static posture generally. And when you have damaged ligaments, the only thing that can support a static posture would then be your muscles. Normally your ligaments can do that phenomenally when they're not damaged, when they're not stretched. When they are stretched, the extra shift that the bones then experience has to be neutralized by muscular engagement. And those muscles cannot engage long enough and strongly enough to support that for any prolonged period of time. And so being in a static posture with screen time will affect people and flare them up who have instability in their neck every single time. And the second thing of that is with the instability in the upper part of the neck, like I have, like Ethan has, like most people have who have these post-concussive issues, the little muscles that are involuntarily coordinating the attempt to stabilize the upper neck when the ligaments have been damaged, those little muscles have something called an oculomuscular reflex loop. So they're basically connected to the eyes. And so their job is to basically support the head when they think the head is going to move. So when your eyes move, the brain thinks the head is going to follow. And so those muscles are constantly doing a tether or pulling back and forth, even when your eyes are moving, tracking across the screen. So if they're already tasked by trying to hold your neck together because of the instability, and then you add static posture and tracking motions with your eyes, those muscles get fried out even faster. Because basically, if you have somebody in slow motion and you videotape them and you say, okay, I want you to turn your head to the right, if you break it down frame by frame, the first thing that happens is they actually move their eyes to the right, you know, as if to say, let's see if it's safe, and then I'll move my head. And then the head follows. But even if they don't move their head and their eyes just move, the brain perceives that the head is going to go, and those muscles are already engaged to try to stabilize that movement. And that's why, you know, tracking and reading and looking at a screen is not only just tiring for your eyes, but because the eyes are directly connected through the brain to those little muscles that support the upper part of the back of the neck, they're being fried out just by reading. And so when people have these flare-ups, it is inevitably the muscles that cause the flare-up. So the pain, the trigger point referral. So trigger points are painful spots in muscles that also trigger pain elsewhere or a symptom elsewhere other than just themselves. And so these trigger points will cause referral into brain pain, what I call it. So it'll either be pain behind the eyes, a headache behind the eyes, forehead, temples. These are all engaged and connected to those muscles in the back of the upper part of the neck. And so the main technique that I use on myself and I use on patients when they come here passively for a treatment is basically sustained pressure of those trigger point spots. And by holding sustained pressure, it depletes the lactic acid that is being built up by that muscle being overly active. And by holding that pressure and the depletion of that lactic acid for about 30 seconds or more, it'll allow the lymphatic system to pick up the lactic acid that has just been depleted out of that muscle, that chunk of muscle tissue. And then the lactic acid gets removed. And as you release that spot from that sustained pressure, because muscles act like sponges, the only thing that fills in there is fresh blood, because blood goes in one direction. And so you, in essence, replenish each spot per spot as you go through there. And as you've replenished enough spots, that muscle then goes from being completely seized up and dysfunctional to becoming functional again. And it can actually then support the instability that the person has, which is the core underlying problem that causes all these other collateral things to happen. And I've designed an S-hook tool, which is basically like a massage cane And I use the term massage loosely because it's intended to do this sustained pressure on oneself. And I try to teach patients how to do that on themselves, because that's literally what I gravitate towards when I'm having a flare-up, is I will, you know, pull aside for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and spend that much time doing these sustained pressure spots on my upper neck. And then after I've done that, 9 times out of 10, my headache is gone, my dizziness is gone, my brain fog is gone, and I can kind of go on further with that. And the other thing is, when I don't have the leisure or the time to go and grab this cane and go lay down with it, what I'll do is just use my knuckle and dig it into the back of my upper neck in with my head in a particular position that accentuates, yeah, exactly like you're doing there, that accentuates the tightness of the muscle. So it brings the muscle out to the surface and gives me better access to it. And I'll do the same thing, hold for 30 seconds, and I'll try to hit a couple spots. And after I've done that, which I actually do on a regular basis throughout every day when I'm treating patients, I'll be treating them because they'll be face down and they won't see what I'm doing, and I'll be knuckling my own neck in an attempt to give myself relief so I can carry on throughout the day. So on any given day, I might do that, you know, a few times to a few dozen times to give myself enough relief to just keep going on. And that's what gets me through the day. And it's been very effective, like I said, since I discovered that it works. And then after I discovered that it works, it's brought me into this entire bucket of science that exists that basically explains why it works. And it's very complex, but the simplicity of it is just ischemic compression, which is basically squeezing all the juice life out of a tissue, which means taking the blood and the oxygen and everything out of it by sustained pressure. And then by holding that long enough, giving the lymphatics time to then pull it away. And then when you release, it fills with fresh and you get a reset. That's literally in a nutshell.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Wow. I don't want to interrupt you, but I saw the video of the S-cane, and that's a funky looking thing there.
Yeah, I designed that specifically with myself in mind. It was sort of a selfish thing because I could not find other practitioners that would be willing to do, because it's not mainstream chiropractic, right? So we're trained to adjust people and we think that's our skill, and it is. So I had a difficult time finding another colleague who was going to do this sort of glorified massage technique on me, which it's not. It's a chiropractic technique. And then do it hard enough for long enough where it wasn't, you know, making their body break down, which is how they would perceive it. And I've been doing it for well over 22 years, and it hasn't broken down my body if you figured out how to do it properly. And so I designed the S-hook with myself in mind so that I wouldn't have to try to find somebody, because I was using all sorts of things before that, like shampoo bottles and trying to, you know, lay down and wedge myself in, because I knew it worked. I just didn't have an effective way of doing it. And I had ordered all the other canes on the market, and none of them had the proper spacing to address the neck. A lot of them, they all are intended to address the shoulder blades, which most people have tightness and issues with, but none of them were geared to address the neck. And so my goal was to find something or create something that addressed the neck, and I did. And then it just snowballed into an actual product.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
That's great. I was kind of wondering too, with the upper neck evaluations, do you think with concussion protocol that has recently come in to include upper neck evaluations, and how would that look if it was able to be integrated in that way to sports?
Yeah, I think initially when you have a golden period where the nervous system responds in such a majorly effective way that it's not really testable to a level of certainty that I think would be required. This is, I think, one of those things when a person's gone through the regular gamut of, you know, rest and recover and remove stimulus and then implement stimulus again and try to challenge yourself to see whether the symptoms arise when you bring your heart rate up and all these things. I think that's the first thing. And if a person then continues to have symptoms, their body will have also sort of subsided out of that golden period where it's splinting and protecting at all costs, where it's hard to assess the upper neck in a proper way. And after that period, so if that's 2 weeks or 3 weeks and a person, or 3 months and a person continues to have symptoms, I think that's the best time to implement this. Because as often as I think it happens, it probably doesn't happen as often as I would possibly propose in the large scale of things. And I think it's the people that end up becoming, you know, what would be considered chronic, or the people that are non-responders. I think those people are needing to be assessed for their upper neck. And, you know, in our world, that ends up being everybody we know kind of thing. But I think in the big scheme of things, there are people that that walk away from that and don't have these injuries and have a true concussion or something akin to that. And the odd ones that do end up having upper neck ligament, permanent ligament damage, those ones will show up as not responding to any of the regular stuff.
Ethan, I just want to ask you, because you seem to have a different story in terms of your concussion seemed to happen a lot younger. You had a lot more throughout. And I just was kind of wondering, when did you start to notice there was a more emphasis on concussions in sports and kind of more knowledge around that came out?
I played hockey all through growing up. And I think for me personally, because I was dealing with post-concussion symptoms, I was aware of it. I don't know, from my very first injury, I was so badly injured that I was aware of concussions from age 8. But I think in general, like when I had that first concussion, my coaches had no kind of concussion training or anything like that. And they actually let me go back and finish the game after 5 minutes of sitting on the bench, which was a big mistake. And it probably led to, you know, more symptoms and longer lasting symptoms. So I believe probably around the age of 17, 18 is when more people started to become aware of post-concussion symptoms, and that would have been about 10 years ago now. I'm 28, so I would say about 10 years ago is kind of when it started to become more mainstream.
Yeah, it's definitely been a growing point in the sport injury, for sure. And I was so surprised, Dr. B, when you said too, like when you were actually diagnosed and had the protocol go through, I was just like, oh, well, that's good. I think my final question to Dr. V was just, what's the most common ailment that you notice in athletes that you get in your clinic, and how do you motivate them to listen to your advice? We know oftentimes athletes just kind of want to get back on the field, especially if that sport is their life, and how do you kind of force them to slow down?
The best thing is to try to help them with what I went through, try to teach them the science, because they're, as much as this may be contrary to popular belief, football players are actually quite smart. They got to know quite a bit of stuff to be able to play that sport and do the right thing at the right time. And so their ability to comprehend and learn in most cases is quite high. And think it's taken for granted, but I think educating them with as much science as I perceive they can receive from me, and painting a picture of very few people end up becoming professional football players and making a living of it. And there's better ways to use your brain or what you've got as a functional brain left over after these injuries that you'd want to utilize, as opposed to having the risk of making things get worse. And so as much as a lot of them want to get back to it, I think a level of education that's not coming from a parent or somebody who they perceive as biased and wants them to not play would be the most crucial element that would help them to take a step back and come to the realization that this isn't all that important in the big scheme of life. And it's not just my parents that are telling me to be safe and protect myself. It's this doctor who's gone through it and who is specializing in it and who sees people from all walks of life that are going through similar things that aren't just from football, and to help them understand that there is a serious threat to their future well-being by not paying attention to what I'm telling them, and that if they want to be able to, you know, enjoy their own children when they're adults and throw the football around and run around and do that stuff, that they really need to be forthwith and honest with myself and with their coaching and training staff when they do get a flare-up, because it is a serious signal of pending doom if they don't address it and listen to it accordingly. And so I've not come across many instances where the players, when I've explained it to them like that and helped them understand the science and the severity of how this affects them neurologically and can affect them permanently for the rest of their lives neurologically, where they don't actually accommodate and basically subdue to the science. I think just telling them you shouldn't do it because we want you to stay safe, they're smart enough that they can comprehend all the other stuff that I just said, that if they're given that, the empowerment of that knowledge will help them almost make a better informed decision that, hey, this probably isn't quite the time for me to go back yet, because I am actually feeling these things. And the biggest thing that I find is a disconnect in medicine and in training staff and whatever else is that just the simple few symptoms that are constantly thrown around, like the headache, the dizziness, when the heart rate goes up, they have, you know, pressure inside their head, light sensitivity, sound sensitivity. Those are just a few. When I start talking to them about, you know, digestive changes, heart rate, and blood pressure, and hearing changes, and anger issues. So those are the basic their irritability. When I point out to them that I believe they're probably highly irritable with people around them, they will confess that, and that's my biggest tip off, that they're still dealing with it is what we consider anger issues, or what parents would call teenager issues. But if it's out of the ordinary for that child or that individual, then it's the strongest indicator that they're still dealing with something that they're not vocalizing. Either they don't know how to vocalize it, or they choose not to vocalize it. But that's the biggest tip off, is that there's some kind of a slight personality change to a very obvious personality change, that they're still dealing with something that is something that should be hindering them from going back to any contact sport.
Mm. Yeah, no, it truly indicates that, like, knowledge is the power, and that personal touch that you're able to give is very important too, I feel, to their injury. But yeah, Nick, if you have any other questions.
I was just asking you, because Aaron's talking about well for this knowledge, not that you have, and that you've installed all this knowledge in yourself and presumably in Ethan. Ethan was the inspiration to start writing the book, or to write your book and your concussion recovery kit. So, can you not hear me? I'm not sure if I...
There you go. I think you're back.
Okay. I'm saying Ethan is probably was the inspiration to write this book and start this Dr. Beast Concussion, Complete Concussion Breakthrough, Dr. Beast Concussion Breakthrough, and the Concussion Recovery Kit. So, can you explain what those are and what the difference is between the Concussion Recovery Kit and Dr. B's Concussion Breakthrough?
Yeah, for sure. So the original idea was to just write a book and kind of document all the information that Dr. Blaskovich has and his unique perspective on post-concussion symptoms. And that's what we put together in the Dr. B's Concussion Breakthrough. We have the audiobook as well as an ebook and a paperback for the book. And then the Concussion Recovery Kit is kind of like an upgraded package where you not only get the book, but you also get a recipe book that suggests different types of foods and meals that you should be eating while you're recovering. You get a custom supplement blend that we've put together. It has 19 different supplements that are full of antioxidants to help the brain deal with the inflammation after a concussion. And then you also get Dr. B's trigger pointer, which is the S tool that he was talking about earlier,
right,
that he uses all the time to relieve the neck pain in his neck. And then we also include blue light blocking glasses to help with symptoms related to light sensitivity, and a sleep mask for people that need to rest during the day or while it's still light out. So essentially the Concussion Recovery Kit includes the supplements, the book, we have an online course, the trigger pointer, and the blue light blocking glasses and sleep masks. So it's kind of like a kit that you would get that has everything you need to be able to recover from a concussion from home.
Oh, great. Well, before I ask you more to talk about where we can get that stuff, you said you've had like, you said 10 to 15 concussions, but you said a bunch. So would you say all of them were where you found them, then if you knew this in the neck, that were they all impacting your neck, or were there some you think would just respond just from not necessarily the same mechanism? Do you think they're all the same mechanism issue?
I believe the worst concussions I had involved the neck, and that's what really led to the long-term post-concussion symptoms. But there were definitely times where I had just purely a concussion where it didn't really involve whiplash or a neck injury. A kid broke a chunk of ice over my head or tried to, but it was too thick and it didn't break, so that gave me a concussion. Getting hit in the head with a basketball one time gave me a concussion on the schoolyard. And then, you know, hits to the head in ice hockey where I just got, you know, a straight hit to the head kind of thing and not, you know, whiplash or you know, snapping of the neck kind of mechanism.
But you're not playing hockey, am I?
I still play some hockey.
Oh,
I
don't play roller hockey.
Yeah, I play roller hockey, so it's non-contact. There is still a little bit of contact, but it's not, you know, full out trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
So yeah, I still play ice hockey, roller hockey, and I do dirt biking in the summer and snowboarding in the winter time. And basically, the inspiration for the Concussion Recovery Kit and the book was that I've been able to overcome all these post-concussion symptoms, so I can still live an active, athletic life. And I know a lot of people just kind of get to the point where they're like, they just kind of give up and like, I guess I'm never going to get better and I'm not going to be able to do those things anymore.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't an option for me.
Yeah.
So I just have continuously worked to try different things and different habits and methods and techniques to see what works with managing my post-concussion symptoms, what causes them to flare up more. Mm. And just bringing that awareness has really helped with me deciding, you know, when to do something, when not to do something, and if post-concussion symptoms show up, then I know exactly the tools to use to help mitigate them.
And you saw Dr. Blaskovich just like, when did you suggest it to him? When you first met him, or when you had seen him for a few times?
It was after I saw him a couple times. So we met for the first time, and he explained the cranial cervical injury. Then the second time we met, we did the motion x-ray, and I saw visually on the computer screen that I was dealing with a neck injury, and that was just really eye-opening. And then after a few treatment sessions, I was just on the table getting worked on, and I just brought up the idea of creating a book and creating a supplement and the Concussion Recovery Kit, and it kind of just snowballed from there.
Good snowball, yeah. And Aaron, do you have anything else to add, or should I just... Okay, well, so I'll
ask you. Nope, those were all my questions.
Well, great. So then Ethan, or Dr. D, or Ann, I should say, would you like to tell people can find your Concussion Recovery Kit and Dr. B's Breakthrough? And also, you're in BC's, but I understand. And where can they find you locally if you're in British Columbia?
So Dr. Blaskovich, he's based here in Langley, BC. We're about an hour outside of downtown Vancouver. And he has the Whiplash and Injury Clinic. He also has a clinic in Linden, Washington, just on the other side of the border for anyone who's in the U.S. That isn't able to come over the border at this time during COVID. They could travel up to Washington and visit him there. And we have concussionrecoverykit.com. That's where you can get the supplements. You can find the book, the online course, all the different products that we have available. We also have motionxray.ca. If anyone's interested in getting their neck x-rayed with the motion x-ray to discover if they are dealing with this injury or not, they can go to motionxray.ca to learn a little bit more about the procedure. And you'd have to come out to Langley here to get the motion x-ray done, because Dr. B is one of the only two doctors in Canada that has access to it.
Which is a bit difficult for us. It's a 12-hour flight, basically.
Yeah, it's a little bit far for you.
Yeah.
And then the last thing is just information about Whiplash in general on our main website for the clinic here is just whiplashclinic.com.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, and hope people find your book and find it helpful, and they can get it on Amazon as well, right? On Amazon? Yep.
Yeah, it's on Amazon. The audiobook is on iTunes as well.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast.
Thank you. Appreciate
your
time. Thank you.
Thank you. Music at the beginning of this podcast is by Ben Sound. www.bensound.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.